Elizabeth Esty, can the Democrats take back the House in 2018?
Absolutely. Will they? I don't know. We are in a very volatile time, to say the least. You know, a year ago, you know, virtually nobody thought that Donald Trump could win, and yet here we are. So I am not going to make predictions, but I will say this. We have a large number of fantastic candidates wanting to run for the House on the Democratic side. Never had so many people reaching out and taking a look at running who feel really inspired, who feel inspired to try to go out there and make a difference. I think last time I saw we had 30 veterans who are running, mostly young veterans running on the Democratic side. That is a huge number and is an indication of this call to service, people feeling called to serve their country, some who have literally served on the battlefield, but others who have created businesses, others who have served as doctors and nurses, others who have, you know, created nonprofits, folks who have manufacturing companies, all different types of people from all over the country who look at what's happening in America and say, I need to be part of making things better. And I'm really heartened by that outpouring of interest and energy, and bring it on. That's what I say, like, get out there, talk with people, find out how we can do better.
I see that one of your colleagues from nearby New York State, John Faso, who appears on this program, said that the deduction of state and local taxes, which we talked about the last time we talked, was something he couldn't basically support. Is that a break in the line? I mean, here was a guy who was all for the president's health care proposal.
Well, I think it is going to be a real dividing line for representatives from California, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, Connecticut, a number of the states which would really be hurt, where the folks we represent would be hurt by this proposal. So it'll be very interesting to see whether party loyalty trumps, as it were, a commitment to one's own district. And at the end of the day, I think you are responsible for your district for and to them. And you better be accountable and you better be voting what is in the best interest of your district. And that you're required to do or you aren't going to stay in office. That's the way it works. Every 2 years, the voters have a chance to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And I think it's with real peril that anyone who represents a state like one of ours, like New York or Connecticut, would vote for something that would so drastically hurt our citizens that we represent.
I wanted to talk to you for a moment about another tax change, which is the alternative minimum tax, the AMT, which is hated by so many people because at least some people think it was never meant to do what it's doing right now. You fill out your taxes and you think you've done pretty well. And the accountant comes along and says, no, you forgot. There's the AMT, which means nothing you said counts. The only thing that counts now is you're not paying enough and we're going to charge you more. And that's because because of inflation creep. It was never supposed to get to that number of people. What do you make of that?
That's exactly right. The AMT, the alternative minimum tax, was designed to deal with inflation. And that's what actually the architect of the Reagan tax cut was just on over the weekend saying exactly that. It was designed to deal with the fact during an era of high inflation. Remember that?
Yeah.
Think about the early 80s. It was after the oil shock. We had, consumer price index was going up by leaps and bounds every year. So you had what's called bracket creep. People found themselves pushed because of inflation, pushed into higher income brackets, but their purchasing power was not moving. Well, we're in a very different place right now. I mean, what's happening right now is the flip side. We have inflation stagnant, which is not a bad thing, but we also have purchasing power not moving either. So what we need is more demand for our demand economy, and that demand's got to come from middle-class folks, the average working person in America, and that's not who's getting the tax cut. So again, this alternative minimum tax has now begun to hit people who, depending on the part of country you live in, are you know, they may be at the edge of the upper middle class, but they're not rich. They're not rich. If you're trying to live in, you know, Northwest Connecticut, it takes a fair amount of money to live in our part of the country. Housing's expensive, fuel's expensive, et cetera. So it's going to take a little more to do that, and you're not making money hand over fist. And that's why the AMT has become such a problem across the country. So I do think there's agreement to address the AMT and the alternative minimum tax and bump that a bit. But that's different than, you know, getting rid of the estate tax entirely, for example.
Yeah. I'm so interested in this idea that we all talk about, which is that there's no inflation. Yet, you know, I'm old. And as a result of being, you know, 76 years old, I walk into a breakfast place and I pay $8 for scrambled eggs. That sounds like a lot to me. I don't know. I used to pay $1.
Exactly. Well, that's you know, may you live long enough to remember when it was $1 for your
or long enough to remember when breakfast was only $8. I mean,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly right. But again, I know there are possibilities for tax reform, and I think the big ones really are the one area I see this possibly getting done is if we figure out how to bring back overseas profits. U.S. corporations have two or three or four, depending on the calculations, trillion dollars, that's with a T, trillion dollars parked overseas that they don't want to bring back to the U.S. And if we figure out a way to appropriately tax those at a somewhat lower rate than currently is out there for corporate tax, we might be able to bring a lot of that back, which could help with reinvestment in the economy, creating new jobs, opening new factories, and all of us want to see that. And frankly, a lot of us would like to see that be available for infrastructure. Put money into an infrastructure bank. And there's wide bipartisan support for that. The Problem Solvers group I'm part of, we're now up to 46 Democrats and Republicans, were very positive about this and have been talking with the administration about what we could do.
Let me switch to North Korea. You got Secretary of State Tillerson, a man of some sagaciousness, at least in business, talking about the need to negotiate. You have the President of the United States cutting his legs out from under him and saying, nah, that's naive. We have other plans. What do you make of that?
Well, I would not want to be Secretary of State Tillerson, I'll tell you that. It's tremendously difficult to try to negotiate for the United States and have your boss, the president, undercutting. Now, some people say that's a good cop, bad cop routine going on there.
Yeah.
Maybe so. I am not at all sure that, frankly, it looks to me a lot more, a lot less coordinated and thought through, shall we say, than that. I think we are better off trying to find a way to engage if we can, because the truth is our sanctions efforts have failed to prevent them from becoming a nuclear power, right? That's just right. A fact. What we have been doing over the last, you know, 30 years has not worked. And so the president seems to believe the answer to that is robust military response with a country that now has, you know, both has nuclear weapons and is, you know, 60 miles from Seoul, South Korea, one of our allies. That seems to me a pretty dangerous go-to next step. So I am concerned, and I'm glad we're going to be having briefings this coming week, in the next couple of days, going to be having briefings in Congress, classified briefings on what's happening in North Korea and what are the options that are on the table.
I'd love to hear that myself. Let me go to Russia, Elizabeth Esty. You know, what was the hottest topic on the table seems to have cooled off a little bit. You've got Special Counsel Mueller out there looking at things. What are you hearing?
Not a lot. I mean, what I think the big news last week was on Facebook going in, and seems like my colleagues were not very impressed with the forthcomingness of the tech world about responsibility for allowing them to be used by the Russian propaganda machine. So I think this is a serious concern for Americans. We've got to figure out how do we have an open, free society? How do we defend free speech and not leave ourselves unduly able to be manipulated? And I think it's pretty clear that did happen last year.
I only got a second here, so I want to ask you really quickly. Do you think Trump's in trouble over the Russian thing?
Time will tell. Time will tell.
Well, we love talking to Elizabeth Estey. She is one of our favorites, no question about it. Northwest Connecticut, a sagacious and wise woman who does not fall for the usual political stuff. Again, Elizabeth, thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure. Take care.